So, another talk, and one of the things I'm going to talk about today is I've given so many instructions about meditation, and one of the instructions which I often give is, it does not matter at all what you are experiencing when you're meditating. So you don't judge the meditation, whether you've got limiters, whether you've got the breath, beautiful breath, you're half asleep, you're restless. That is not the point of meditation, to judge the meditation by what you're experiencing. But how you're judging the meditation is like by how you are experiencing these things. How you're reacting to what you are experiencing. Because it doesn't really matter about the object of meditation. What is really important is the attitude you have towards that object of meditation. Because that is where meditation lives. It doesn't live in the knower. It doesn't live in the object. It lives in that space in between. You know, the so-called one who knows. When I call it one who knows, please don't call that a soul or a self. That's just one way of looking at things. Between the thing which is knowing and what you're experiencing. What's in between those two? Because you may be having this beautiful nimitta. And in between that, you may have fear, you may have excitement, you may have wanting. I want this to get into jhanas. I want to keep it stable. I'm afraid of it. I'm excited about it. And if that is what is happening between you and that nimitta, you've lost the meditation. In other words, it's not going to get anywhere. It's more attachment, more doing, more craving, or more something or other. And it means you've lost the meditation. Even if you're sleepy, and then between you and that sleepiness is making peace, being kind to the sleepiness, your poor mind, your brain has been working too hard, you may be sick, whatever it is. If you have that peace, kindness, gentleness between you and your sleepiness, well done, you are meditating. So it does not matter what you are experiencing. It does matter how you are experiencing it. So that is one of the reasons why I don't really pay too much attention, give too much emphasis to being in this stage or that stage or another stage of meditation. That is not so important. What is important is how you're relating to it. Which is one of the reasons I mentioned yesterday that the right intention, the second factor of the Eightfold Path, is crucial to meditation. And that is how you relate to things. It's not what you're experiencing, pain, suffering, bliss or whatever, but how are you relating to that? And the second factor of the Eightfold Path says to make sure that you relate to things with, they call it like letting go, renunciation. It's called nekama. And renunciation, you know, you can maybe get a feel for renunciation, but sometimes we're not quite sure what we are supposed to renounce. Should I renounce everything? Should I renounce my precepts and just go and get drunk? You know, I'm just attached to being a monk. I should sort of get a life. Some people argue like that. They're so crazy. There was that fellow called Rajneesh, and he went to the limit of this by saying, I am so detached, he said. I am so detached, I'm not even attached to detachment. Which meant he did whatever he wanted. And that is, you know, nice, clever speak. But, you know, if you think about it, anyone who's smart realizes that's just an excuse for indulgence. So you have to be very careful here what you're going to renounce. So if you renounce the wrong things, you're just, you know, going to just be indulging in other things. So you have to renounce the right thing. And the right thing to renounce, as I mentioned to you many times, and you see this in the Eighth and the Four Noble Truths, is renounce craving, renounce doing things. Renounce the past, renounce the future, renounce thinking, renounce the body. And how does that actually work? By renouncing control. When you renounce doing things and wanting things, everything becomes very peaceful. So remember the first simile which I gave about the lake? And the only reason why there's waves is because the wind is blowing. And if the wind stops, the waves get less and less until there's no waves left at all, not a ripple. And the lake is perfectly smooth like a mirror and can reflect the truth and the beauty of everything around it. That is a simile of the lake. The wind is making the problems, and so our job is to renounce the wind. And in the mind, similarly, that is the winds of wanting. So we renounce that. And because it's like renouncing wanting, that is why, to make it clearer, I usually interpret that first part of the right intention as making peace. I call it making peace because it's renouncing will, renouncing doing, renouncing controlling, renouncing changing stuff. That's what you're renouncing. And so when I call it making peace, it means you renounce the correct thing. So the first thing is, you know, whatever you're experiencing in your meditation, you make peace with it. And when you have the idea of making peace, you know, with the things, making peace with the sleepiness, making peace, you know, with the restless mind, making peace, you know, with the mind which is always over here one moment, over here with another moment, make peace with it. Don't be upset and angry and frustrated and beat yourself up feeling guilty. I'm a hopeless meditator. I should do better than this. Come on, I wasted too much time. No, make peace with whatever you're experiencing right now. And that is called right intention. And you can imagine that, you know, see this building over here? This is made of so many bricks, thousands of bricks. And I was here watching the bricklayers, what lay each one of these bricks one by one. And when you lay 5,000 or 6,000 bricks, now you have the meditation hall of bricks. If you lay many moments of peace, you make peace with this moment, you make peace with the next moment, you keep on making peace with every moment, soon you have a house of peace in which you live. That's why we call it making peace. You're creating peace right in this moment, by making peace with whatever you have to experience. That's the first part of the second factor of the Eightfold Path. And the next factor is probably even more important. It's being kind. Now this is Avyapada. It's being kind to whatever you're experiencing. Being kind to your cough, my poor throat. If you want to cough, that's fine with me. Never mind. I still love you. If you are kind to your body, have you ever noticed just how your body gets healthier when you're kind to it? But when you're tough on it, it's stressed and your body gets more and more sick. I've often used kindness to cure illnesses and stuff like that. That's why you have nurses. In the old days, that nurses would spend most of the time not checking temperatures and writing reports, which is, you know, what, you know, the doctor should have been doing. They just palmed it all off to the poor nurses. What the nurses should be doing is just being kind to a person, holding their hand and having a chat. The caring part of health therapy. And now they've related that, they've given that. I don't know what the doctors do, maybe they do a lot of work, but the nurses do a lot of the doctor's work. And the caring is usually left to the dogs in pet therapy. So the dog comes along the wards and goes licking people, and you can pat the dog, and it's really nice patting the dog. And people get a lot healthier with pet therapy, simply because, you know, a little dog will care for the person who is sick. So, you know, caring is a great benefit to one's health. And it's also a great benefit to the peace in one's mind. So you're caring for this moment. You're being kind to it. And that kindness in meditation, again, is extremely important. And your meditation won't go deep if there's not enough kindness. I often pause in my meditation, again, if it's not going very deep. I mentioned before, sometimes I want something. And other times I look to say, I'm just being a bit too hard. Hard on myself, hard on my mind. And so I add extra metta to my meditation. Metta to myself, metta to the person who's banging the door, metta to the fly which is buzzing around because no one closed the door, metta to my tummy which is buzzing around because maybe I ate too much, metta just to my poor, stupid mind. I have loving kindness to this moment. And you know, so often that loving kindness to this moment just allows the mind to soften and it goes very, very deep. So loving kindness is really important. It's make being kind. It's part of the Eightfold Path. And again, going back to the question which people often ask again and again, yeah, we know Ajahn Brahm, this is the path of letting go, but how do you let go of things? It's okay, you know, the four ways of letting go I mentioned yesterday, but it's still so hard to do. How can you do that? And I've noticed that I can let go of my body when I've relaxed it, when I've been kind to it. If I've got a headache or a stomachache or an itch in my nose, it's very hard to ignore that. You may try and just say, I'm going to watch my breath. I'm not going to worry about the ache or pain in my knee, but it still keeps coming back up again. And it demands your attention. So, nowadays, I'm kind to my body. I relax everything, first of all, I even stroke my body. It's one of the reasons why that I've taught many, many different ways of being kind to your body. Now, I haven't said this yet in public on this retreat. I have told a few of you during your interviews. I'm now going to give you your little exercise, which you can take home with you, you can practice when you go back to wherever you came from, how to be kind to yourself. An exercise for you. So please follow me. Put your hands straight out in front of you. Very good. Now follow me. Bring them in. Bring them in. Follow exactly what I do. Bring them in. Give yourself a hug. Doesn't that feel good? If no one else will give you a hug, you can always give yourself one. How does that feel? Good, happy, peaceful. So if during your meditation you're really stressed out, getting nowhere, gee, another hour to go before lunch and I'm not getting anywhere, I feel terrible, hands out, give yourself a nice hug in the meditation hall, and then meditate, it will work. A little bit of kindness changes your attitude, engages with whatever you're experiencing, and you find it's easier to let go. Now that is just being able to let go of your body. Now imagine all that stuff in the past you can't let go of. How about giving that a hug too? In other words, softening the past with kindness. So don't try and say, I'm just going to let go of that past. What my husband did, what my wife did, what my business partner did, took all the money, all that sort of stuff. Be kind to the past. Give it this beautiful, beautiful loving kindness, this softness, until even the past becomes, it's not hard pain like pain in the knees anymore, it's nice and soft. And then you find it's much easier to let go of. Once I've softened the pain in my knees with a bit of kindness, even just rubbing it, it's very easy then to let it go. When it's hard and there's a lot of negativity towards it, it's impossible to let it go. So you use this right intention of kindness towards your past. Yeah, you know, I did a wrong thing. I was stupid. I'd done many stupid things in my life. I don't know if I told you on this retreat that when I was about 10 years of age, I made a bomb. I did. Well, I know. It wasn't really me. I just supplied the tin can. And my mate, you know, he was this whiz in chemistry, and he got all the chemicals from his elder brother. You know, he just borrowed them, sort of. And we made a bomb together. And I'd supplied the tin can, and we put it off in the park, we lit it, and it went bang! And I was so excited, we felt so proud that it actually worked. Until we got caught. And then by the park, we were in big trouble. Only a 10-year-old kid messing around, but it was really exciting. So, you know, you get into all sorts of mischief when you're a kid. But I'm soft to it. Now, what's the other terrible thing I did? Do you think I was a really kind son to my mother? The other terrible thing I did to my mum. I must have been about 8 or 9 years of age at the time. And there was a food craze in London. And it's only lasted about a year. It was jellied eels and mashed potato. Eels and mash. It was like from the East End, very poor people's food. And it just became a craze for about a year. So in the west part of London, still a poor part where we live, they opened up an eel shop. You get eel and mash. And eating an eel is disgusting. But you know, it was just a delicacy. So, I remember I was about 8 years of age, maybe nine, I forget which. I think probably eight, more like it. It was my mother's birthday. And I decided to get her a birthday present. So I went to the eel shop and bought a live eel. This is so naughty, so terrible. And I found a little box. And I put the eel inside the box. And I covered the box in this beautiful birthday paper. You know, the wrapping paper you can get. And I really went to town on this, making sure I tied a nice little bow. And you get these little cards, you know, you see from the shop as well. And say, "Happy birthday, Mum. You know, from your son, Peter." And a few little hearts on it. I gave it to my mother for her birthday present. And I was a very good actor. I was really restrained. She didn't suspect anything. But she thought, you know, how sweet. You got a birthday present from an eight-year-old kid. Isn't this nice? If you get a present from a kid about that age, isn't it sweet? And she was so happy. And she opened it. And when she opened the lid, the eel reared up. She screamed so loudly. And at that time, I could let go of my restraint, burst out laughing, and run like hell to escape her wrath. I vanished very quickly. Okay. So that's the sort of boy I was. I hadn't changed. Still cheeky. So it's great fun. This is for my poor old mother, what I put her through. So anyway, but you're kind to the past. You laugh at it. That's one of the nice things I remember, the training I got from people like Ajahn Chah. When somebody made a mistake, he laughed. Never once did he sort of criticize you or say, "Stupid monk." He would just think it's so funny. You know, when the mistakes we made. And from that time on, I realized, this getting angry at stuff and criticizing, "You stupid person, why did you do that? Now, don't do that again." Instead, when people make a mistake, you just burst out laughing. And other people laugh, which means you create so much happiness with all the mistakes you make. That's why when you do make a mistake, please start laughing. Don't get angry. And then everyone will laugh with you. And then the mistakes in life, all the stupid things we do, you know, we don't sort of carry it around. We've softened it. So I don't know what stuff you've done. I don't know why you did it. It's a stupid thing you did. Please use humour, laugh, be kind to it. And once it softens, it's so easy to let it go and disappear. So we're using loving kindness to our past. And it's the same to your future. And why do people plan so much? Because they're afraid. I mean, afraid because when you look in the future, you always look in the future with negativity, with anxiety. You think of all the things which might go wrong. You know, will I get sick? You know, if I drink rainwater, will I get sort of, you know, if I stay here too much longer, you know, will I want to become a monk or a nun? You know, people actually ask me that. Is there any danger from getting into jhanas? And there is actually danger in getting into jhanas. The only danger is if you experience too many jhanas, you tend to lose your hair. You've had too many jhanas. But we look on the future with negativity, and of course it's very hard not to worry about it. You know, so sometimes what we need to do is to soften the future with some kindness, with some softness, and then it's much easier to let it go. Which means we can be in the present moment. And your mind now, you can see, just if you are angry, negative, of course that generates a huge amount of thoughts. But what happens when you have beautiful loving kindness at this moment? And when you just laughed at something I said, it stops the thoughts. You get silent, you get peaceful. A happy mind is a peaceful mind. And all thinking comes from unhappiness, from discontent. If you are happy, you tend not to think so much. And every time you think a lot, it's because you're unhappy. It's true, isn't it? So now you understand why you think so much. And so getting upset at thinking so much, that makes you more unhappy, which means you think even more and you can't stop it. So get to the source, get to the cause, and get some happiness with some kindness coming up. Kindness to your stupid old mind and stupid old brain, thinking stupid things. And when you're kind to it, it's very easy to let go of all that stuff. So now we're trying to actually add that kindness to whatever we're doing. Now, even when you get to your breath, breathing in, breathing out, be kind to your breath. Have you ever said thank you to your breath for breathing all your life? Do you wake up in the morning and say, wow, thank you, breath, you carried on even though I wasn't watching you. You're still alive. Thank you, breath. If you have some gratitude and kindness to your breath, it's amazing. If you have kindness to anything, it changes the whole ball game. And you know, everything goes much smoother. This is one of the other little stories I haven't mentioned yet. Any problem you have in your meditation, any obstacle in meditation, please remember the story of the monster in the emperor's palace. And the monster in the emperor's palace story, I tell it every retreat, and it's in opening the door of your heart. But this was actually taught by the Buddha. Amazing psychology. An emperor was off on business, and while she was away on business, I usually say he, but I'm saying she today, because girls can be emperors too. So the empress was away on business, and while she was away, a big bad monster came into the palace. Sometimes people say that the reason why people like hearing my stories, I always treat people as children when I tell the stories. And you know, that makes it more attractive. So if you tell stories to other people, tell the stories as if you're telling it to a little child. And even the adults, 60, 70, 80 years of age, they also enjoy them. Because actually we like being treated as a child when it comes to stories. So there's a big bad monster came into the palace. And he was, the monster was a he. Was big and terrifying and ugly, and he was so frightening that all the guards and the soldiers, they froze in terror. Some of them ran out the door, some of them hid under the table, some of them went into the cupboards and closed it and hid. They were so frightened of this monster. And of course that allowed the monster to go right in the center of the palace, right in the main room, and sit on the emperor's chair. Imagine that happened here. You know, I was off doing interviews, and a big monster came in this hall. And he came, sat right in my chair. What would you say? That's that John Brahms chair! Get out of here! You don't belong! Now that's what they did to this monster. And because of that, the monster grew an inch bigger, more ugly, more monstrous, even more frightening, if that was possible. And that really scared everybody. But one or two of the soldiers became brave. And they said, get out of here! Who do you think you are? You don't belong here! Get out! Did that sound angry? Or do I need some more practice? Get out of here! That's why I like telling stories, because I can do things I'm not allowed to do as a monk. You know, as a monk I'm not allowed to get angry. But when I'm telling stories I can pretend, really get into it. Get out of here! And at those few unkind words and gestures, the monster grew an inch bigger. More ugly, more smelly, more offensive. And all the other soldiers and guards and ministers joined in, trying to get rid of this ugly monster. But every unkind word, unkind deed, even unkind thoughts, the monster just grew in size, became more ugly, more smelly, more offensive. And that had been going on for a long time when the Empress came back. And as soon as she came in, she saw this huge monster. So ugly, so frightening, so smelly. As I often say, this is, I've got this little metaphor, it's a really nice metaphor. It was so disgusting smell that even the maggots crawling on its skin, they were sick, they threw up, they vomited. Now that takes a lot of bad smell to make maggots sick. When she saw this disgusting, frightening sight in her palace, what did she do? She was smart. She was wise. You know why? Because she'd been to Jhana Grove on many of my retreats. She knew exactly what to do. She said, "Welcome, monster. Thank you so much for coming to visit me. Has anyone got you a cup of tea? Now, we have nice Sri Lankan tea with condensed milk. And we give you a couple of biscuits with it as well." And those few bits of kindness made the monster smaller. Now, when you give that to me, I actually get bigger, not smaller. But I don't mind. She was so kind. She was kind to the monster. And every act of kindness, the monster grew an inch smaller, less ugly, less smelly, less offensive, and the maggots stopped throwing up. And that taught people what their mistake was. They were giving anger to this monster. They just made it worse. So they all started being kind to the monster. They all started seeing just what you want to drink. You don't have to have Sri Lankan tea. We have green tea, we have pink tea, we have yellow tea. I don't know what teas you've got over there. Chamomile tea, herbal teas. And you want something to eat with that? We have a cheese and two chocolates for you. But every act of kindness, the monster grew an inch smaller, less ugly, less smelly, less offensive. And they just kept on being so kind to that monster. But soon it looked like no time at all. The monster was back to the size when he first came in. But they carried on being kind. They never stopped there. And they were so kind to this monster. The monster grew so tiny. One more act of kindness and the monster vanished completely away. Disappeared. And that was a story which, you know, every time I change, I adapt a bit, I play around with it. It's not quite as the Buddha said. But this is basically what the Buddha said. And he said, we call that an anger-eating monster. It eats anger, it feeds on negativity. And you say to it, get out of here, you don't belong. It gets much worse. Anger-eating monsters in meditation. This is about all anger-eating monsters. Sleepiness. Get out of here, I slept enough already, get out. It makes it worse. Restlessness. Get out of here. Look, I want to meditate. I don't want to think about past and future. Get out of here. It gets bigger and more of a problem. Or fear, anxiety, whatever you've got in there. Most of what you have as obstacles in meditation are all anger-eating monsters. Every time you say, get out of here, I don't want you, it gets worse. So what do you say? When you're sleepy, welcome sleepiness. Thank you for coming to visit me. I said this to someone in Nolamara last weekend or two ago. They have anxiety disorders. And I said, then they've been doing really well. You know, some of my teachings, the anxiety was lessened. But he said a few days ago it came back again. So what should I do? I said, look, I told you what to do. when anxiety comes back, and I haven't seen your anxiety for about 3 or 4 days. Where have you been? Welcome. Thank you for coming to visit me. She got it. She laughed. She understood what she needed to do. If you have anxiety and you say, anxiety, get out of here. You don't belong. What happens to your anxiety? It gets much worse, yeah. It gets stronger and more powerful. Imagine you say to anxiety, welcome, anxiety. I haven't seen you for weeks. Thank you. Where have you been? I've missed you. And of course, that takes away the energy from anxiety. You know, even like depression. Oh, gee, I don't feel so good today. You know, I'm a bit tired. I don't know why. I don't feel that hot today. So welcome, depression. Thank you for coming to visit me. You know, I haven't seen you in days. Thank you so much. Now, if you say that, you totally undermine the cause for depression, anxiety, the negativity which feeds it. Which is one of the reasons why, when you're doing meditation, remember the anger eating demon sort of simile. Whatever you're experiencing in meditation, welcome. Thank you for coming to visit me, Nimitta. Thank you for coming to visit me, Sloth and Torpor. There's a noise, someone bangs the door. Oh, thank you. Thank you for giving me, you know, something to listen to. Welcome things with kindness. And then you find the door only bangs once. Never 3, 4, 5, 6 times. They bang the door. Who was that banged the door? I'm going to tell Ajahn Brahm. I'm going to get them blacklisted. That person who bangs the door, they're always banging the door. And they also bang the door in my cottage as well. They're just serial door bangers. And the bang of the door finished a long time ago, but it's still echoing in your brain. That's the problem. So when you're kind to things, you soften them and you get into very deep meditation. Somebody did ask about combining kindness with your breath. And I remember the first time I did that, and it was absolutely brilliant. I still remember the time I did that. I was remember Bianca in the old place we used to have weekend retreats on Penguin Road in Safety Bay. You know, I was teaching. I was really tired because went there on a Friday evening and I was working like a really, really hard, you know, in that monastery. So and then I had to go and teach a retreat. Really, really tired. I mean, you know, I had to teach something. What could I teach today? Something new. So, loving kindness with the breath. When I teach it, I do it as well. I follow it. And incredible meditations. And that was, I had one of my best dreams ever then. This is monk dreams. You know, in the middle of the night, in my room, I dreamt I was in jhana. That was wonderful. Dreaming in jhana, dreaming there, blissing out. Oh, so wonderful. Now, I can recommend those dreams. It's the best dream you could ever have. You know, one of the other best dreams I ever had as a monk, I remember, this is like monk dreams. You know, we don't have normal people's dreams. I remember dreaming of having this psychic battle with a Hindu. It was. You know, it was like Buddhism versus Hindu, you know, just like the World Cup final of psychic power. And we're having a great time, flying through the air, zapping each other, bang, 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 bang. And I've never seen one of those video games, because, you know, I became a monk too early for that, but I imagine that's what it was like, zapping each other through the room, blah, blah, blah. And of course, you know who won. It was my dream, okay? You know, great fun as a monk. When you begin to. So anyway, that's when you're kind to things. Everything gets so peaceful, so really kind to the breath. And it was just so easy to watch. Whatever you're kind to is so easy to be with. Am I kind to you? That's why you keep putting your name down on the interviews and people keep coming every time and they don't want to go. Come on, 10 minutes are up. Go, 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 go. Oh, no. One more question. I remember, again, one of my favourite monks of all time. Not Ajahn Chah, this Ajahn Tate. We've got a picture of him up on my room. And I just remember going to see him in his monastery in the north, east of Thailand, just outside of Chiang Mai. Outside of Nong Khai. And when I went to see him in his room, he got this beautiful blast of loving kindness. And I had this feeling, which you know many of you will probably have, and if you do, it's just a beautiful feeling. I just sat down, I don't want to go anywhere else. I'm just going to sit here for the rest of my life and just die right here. You know, you had this total acceptance. You know, I didn't have to prove myself, I didn't have to be anything, I didn't have to get enlightened and be a great monk. You're just absolutely 100% totally accepted. And that made me so peaceful and still, having that sort of attitude. And this experience was like that. I try and do that with my, say, my breathing. Breath, you know, if you want to come in, fine. If you want to go out, fine. However you want to go, I really care for you. And you give it that such immense loving kindness. Your breath doesn't want to go anywhere. Then I'm going to hang out with you forever. And watching your breath is just no effort at all. So this is again wisdom power. When you have loving kindness, the way is your breath, and it stays with you. And later on, when you get your nimittas, the lights coming up, please don't forget loving kindness. Don't try and control those nimittas and say, yes, I've got nimittas, now I'm going to catch you, and I'm going to kill you and put you on my wall, like people used to collect butterflies or on the heads of a reindeer or stuff. That's not what you do to nimittas. You know, they're not trophies. You can tell other people, I had a nimitta. My one was green one. And put it on the wall. I'll get it. Wouldn't it be wonderful if you could take a snapshot of it to show your friends? That is not what we do for nimittas. You have this beautiful kindness towards them. Oh, thank you for coming to visit me. You know, I just waited a long time for you. Yeah, just, but please, don't be bothered. You don't have to stay. If you want to go visit somebody else, that's fine. But you know, thanks so much. You're just so cute. When you have an attitude of softness like that, number one, your nimitta becomes really soft. And it stays with you. You hang out together. It's just like, you know, having a nice little kitten or something. You know, as soon as the kitten sees you, it just jumps up on your lap. You know, I like cats, and it's one of the problems, we had this cat, actually it wasn't our cat, over in our city centre in Nolomara. I'll never forget this story. The cat was from the neighbours. But every Friday night, Saturday afternoon, it would come in to the reception area, you know, to see the monks and the visitors, because, you know, it always got lots of attention, and it particularly liked me. So it'd always go in my lap and I'd sort of stroke it and stuff like that. And then we got a call one Saturday afternoon, just about 3:15, and it was from the neighbour. She said, there's my cat over there. Because she knew where it was. It always used to come on a Saturday. Yeah, it's over here. Oh, good, I'm coming to collect it because I'm moving house today. And so I've got to take my cat away. And so I said, okay, no, she's over here on my lap. No, she actually wasn't on the lap. She was playing around with all the other people. So, yeah, come around. She's over here. And as soon as the owner walked into the glass doors, the cat took one look at her, ran towards me and jumped up on my lap. In cat language, you're saying, sanctuary, sanctuary, I don't want to go. So, if you give people things loving kindness, of course they like to hang out with you. They like to stay with you. And that's like nimittas. You know, it's like the nimitta, you know, if you give it so much loving kindness, it keeps jumping up on your lap and wants to hang out with you. You don't control it. You don't tell it what to do, you just give this beautiful kindness and it stays with you. And that's actually how you work with every state of meditation. You're so kind to it. That's, you know, the relationship you have to it. You're not trying to control it, want anything out of it. You don't ask anything from it. You have this beautiful kindness towards it. So that's why we say that making peace, being kind. And the lastly, be gentle. That's the last of the three right intentions. Please be gentle with your body. If it hurts, move your body. Sometimes people have the idea that once you start meditating, you've got about 1 or 2 minutes to get your body correct, and then you've got to keep it still, or else, don't move. Even though your blood is drying up and your bones are about to turn to dust, don't move, otherwise you won't get enlightened, no way. And people are so cruel to their body. One of the monks I grew up with, because I learned from stories, from real experiences rather than theory, he decided to sit all night and to sit through pain. He crossed his legs. He said, I'm not going to move, no matter how much it hurts. This is it, enlightenment or bust. You know, this is that, it's mostly a guy thing. You know, like doing stuff like that. Girls maybe not so much, but you know, a few of you girls try that as well. Okay, I'm going to sit. Okay, this is it. Jhana. This is only 1 or 2 days left. I'm going to get jhana oil. I don't care. I'm going to sit here and I'm not going to move. No matter what happens. And he tried this. And afterwards, we had to send him to hospital for a double knee reconstruction. He really injured his body. And when I saw that, this is absolutely crazy stuff. Why do people do this for? Then they're trying to conquer their body and conquer their mind. It's just like the US Marines. Jhana Grove is not Guantanamo Bay. This is not a boot camp. You know, this is Jhana Grove. It's soft, it's kind, it's gentle. That's why you get good meditation here. That's why more people like coming here. That's why they're not scared of meditation. Already in the interviews, and I know this from talking to others, that some people are scared of coming on meditation retreats. Because they think it's painful. They think, oh, I've got to endure all this pain. You know, I suppose I'd better do it because I'm a Buddhist. I'm supposed to meditate. And they go to these retreats and they are like sort of torture camps. And that is not what you had here, is it? Has this been a torture camp? Well, maybe in the evenings when you're hungry. But you know, even then, a few people have already confessed to me they've got noodles in their room. I know what you're up to. Don't worry about it, it's kind. So, it's a kind retreat. It's not forced. Because this is the third factor of the Eightfold Path. This is how the Buddha taught. Gentleness. It's called ahimsa. Remember Mahatma Gandhi is ahimsa? That's, you know, this last one, ahimsaka sankappa. No violence. And I'm really surprised why it is that there are Buddhists who wouldn't hurt a fly, literally. They wouldn't swat a mosquito. But as I said, they hit somebody on the back to teach them how to meditate. You know, I was in Bhutan just in February. And we've got the pictures. We have the pictures up in Nolamara of the disciplined monk. I couldn't believe it. This was in a Vajrayana temple in Bhutan. You know, and we went in there as tourists. And the monks there, the Sangha, were having a meeting to elect a new disciplined monk. And when he came out into the courtyard, no kidding, he had a whip. You know, 3 long leather thongs. Whack! On the ground. And the guy told us, be careful because you are all, you know, even the lay people as well, you are in the monastery grounds. He has full right to whip you too. I don't know if that was true, but people believed it, including me. You know, you sort of walked away, put your head down on the ground, didn't you have eye contact? And get out as soon as you can. And then, what? Is he supposed to be a Buddhist monk? And do stuff like this? What the heck's going on? There's real photographs. We've got them on the website somewhere on the Nolamara. So there's something wrong there somewhere. Now, aren't we supposed to be gentle? Compassionate and kind, non-violent? But it's amazing sometimes, you know, okay, you can see that in the sort of a disciplined monk. That's really off. But you do that to yourself. How many of you punish yourself? You're not gentle with yourself. Forgive yourself. Be kind to yourself. You know, just tuck yourself in when you go to bed at night. Take the teddy bear with you and give it a good cuddle. Be gentle with yourself. Be kind to yourself. And be gentle with your mind. Because you find when you are gentle with your mind, rather than violent to your mind. I think you know what I mean, the violence we do to our own minds. It's amazing just how your mind responds. It wants to stay with you rather than always running away. Similarly, which I give on every retreat, of the two, did I do this yet on the first day, the two ladies being invited out for coffee? Or did I? I think I did, didn't I? Yeah. Yeah. But you're just as old as me, you've forgotten it. Yeah, I did say it, but I just remind you and remind myself as well. You know, you get a phone call, your friend calls and says you'd like to come out for a cup of coffee. You know, and they tell you exactly where to go, where to sit, what to drink, what to talk about. And no, they're such a control freak. You know, they even tell you what type of coffee you're supposed to have. And that's why I get really upset when people say, Ajahn Brahm, this is not healthy for you. Take this, it's healthy for you. Of course I don't like being around people like that, always trying to control me. No one does. So instead of, even if they've got the right, you know, nice intentions, it's still the wrong practice. So you're kind to somebody. So this lady, anyway, was trying to control this girl. And so the girl thinks quickly, oh yeah, I just got to go to the dentist. I forgot about it, I'm so sorry, but I really do have to go to the dentist. Sorry, I can't come. And then afterwards she gets a second phone call from another friend and says, yeah, I'd like to come out with a cup of coffee to you. You know, you've always been talking to me about this coffee shop and that type of coffee you like. And you know, I've never had Sri Lankan tea with condensed milk anymore, but you say it's really nice, so you know, you've got a good mind, so I'm going to try that as well. And I want to sit where you want to sit, and I want to talk about what you want to talk about. If someone treats you like that with kindness, of course you want to hang out with them. So you say, well, I've got a dentist appointment, but I'm cancelling, I'll go next week. And you spend time with your best friend, and you talk about what you want to talk about, drink what you like to drink, and have such a wonderful time because they care about you. And you know what happens, you end up spending more time than you thought. 3 or 4 hours go by, oh my goodness, I've got to go back now. And time flies because you're with someone who's caring for you, who's gentle with you. That is how you stay with your mind in meditation. If you're kind to your mind, just like that person who asks you, where do you want to go for coffee? What do you want to do? They stay with you a long, long time. It's the kindness, the gentleness, which is the cause of sustaining attention on one thing. Not willpower, but kindness. It's one of the reasons why places like Bodhinyana Monastery, they just never got enough space to stay. 24 people on the waiting list. Because it's a kind place to stay. People like coming there, and they don't like leaving. Just like you come on a retreat, it's a kind place to stay. You stay here, you don't want to go home. Because people are being kind to you. Just like your mind. You're kind to your mind. You sit down here, up comes your mind, and it doesn't want to leave. It's dinner time. Oh, what the hell, I'm staying with my mind. I'm having a nice peaceful meditation. That is how you sustain attention. That is where stillness comes from. So please remember that part of meditation is understanding the Dhamma. The Dhamma is meditation. The two work together. It's not two separate things. You're not hard on yourself in meditation and soft on little cats afterwards. What you do outside is what you do inside. What you do inside is what you do outside in your meditation and in life. So you can always make peace. You can always be kind. You can always be gentle. And there are some times you get very sick. You know, sometimes people leave the retreat because they're sick. They shouldn't. They should stay here. We'll look after you. But I can't meditate, they say. What do you mean you can't meditate? Meditation is not watching your breath. Meditation is not getting nimittas. You're sitting there, you know, with a cold or feeling terrible. Can you make peace with your body? Can you be kind to your cough? Can you be gentle, you know, with your fever? If you can make peace and be kind, be gentle, you're meditating. You're following the Eightfold Path. Carry on. So never think that meditation has to be done sitting up in full lotus, watching your breath. Sometimes people think that's meditation and they're not meditating at all. On the outside they are, on the inside they're controlling, they're fighting, they're angry. They look like they're meditating, but inside they're on fire. Much better to see someone in bed, sneezing, coughing, and being so kind to the cough. Cough, please, come. You can do better than that cough. Come on, more. There you go. I mean, being so gentle, and making peace with things. That's why when people say, I'm really sick, I can't meditate. Can you make peace? You can always make peace with things. Can you be kind? You have freedom to be kind or angry. You've got the choice. Can you be gentle? Of course you can.
Therefore, you can meditate any place, any time, any situation. And if you continue making peace, being kind, being gentle, all the other factors of the Eightfold Path, they come up, they come into play. So you sit here really sick, make peace, be kind, be gentle. And then sickness is gone. Where's it gone? I don't know where it's gone. You make peace, be kind, be gentle. You're creating peace. You're creating this beautiful, healing, loving kindness. This wonderful gentleness. So your mind is just so soft, so easy to meditate, so happy. You get still. You get incredible peace. It leads you all the way into the jhanas and into enlightenment. So when people ask, how do you meditate? Make peace, be kind, be gentle. Finished. I really should have said that on the first talk and shut up afterwards. No more talks, no more Q&As, no more interviews. Just make peace, be kind, be gentle. That's all you need to do. Easy. Very good. So there is today's talk. Shame I left it to the end. But you still got another day. Make peace. Be kind. Be gentle. That's all. Can you do that?